Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the In the Truck podcast. Excuse me. Goodness gracious. Note to self, clear throat before starting podcast. So, today's podcast, of course, is brought to you by my book, The Toxic Masculinity Crisis, as I drive through a pit, available now on Amazon.com. Masculinity is wonderful and good. Toxic Masculinity Crisis spells out the case for what masculinity is, what it's for, and what you're supposed to be doing with it. Also get a little bit into the patriarchy, what that's for, what it does, and how wonderful it is. Definitely worth the read. So there's a big, special deal this weekend, and I am very proud of y'all frugal people. You beautiful cheapskates, cut from the very cloth that I am. You guys took advantage of that free Kindle version in record numbers. So now you know you're part of the deal. Today is Monday. Today is the day you tell your friends, 10 friends, that you bought a book, it was fantastic, you loved it, and that they should also buy it and where to get it. That's the deal. So, but seriously, I hope everyone that got the free Kindle version this weekend enjoys it. I was happy to do that. I'm happy that so many of you took advantage. It made me happy. Which you shouldn't, because I don't get any money for that, but I'm glad to know people are reading it. I'm glad to know people are interested. And I'm glad to know there are people like me out there who are who are just waiting for the right deal. But now that you got the right deal, like I said, you got to tell your friends. Pony it up. So yeah, the Kindle version is only $4.99 now that the deal's over. And the paperback, $11.99. So in either case, it's still a great deal. So good job. Big success. Well done. Well done, everybody. All right. I'm not a constitutional scholar per se, but I have read the document, and I have read the notes from the meetings that produced the document, and I have read the letters that were written between the people who were at the meetings who produced the document, and I have read the appeals to the public by the people at the meetings who produced the document. So I think I have a pretty good idea what the document was about. And they used to teach it in school. Now, I believe they still kind of teach the structure of the document in school, but they used to teach the point, what it was about, what they were afraid of, what they were trying to prevent. Our last president complained, Obama, that the Constitution was full of negative liberties, which is fancy talk for it restricts the government, which is literally the entire point of the document. So let me go over it real quick. I don't want to get too into it. There are people essentially calling for major changes in the Constitution or the way the country runs because of the fact that the majority, quote unquote, majority doesn't rule. That we have minority rule in the country, and that is because the majority of the country is represented by something like 18 senators and also the Electoral College allows for candidates who are not supported by the majority of voters to become president of the United States. So the complaint is this isn't fair. The Republicans have control of the government. All three branches of both branches of the legislature and the presidency, and they didn't have a majority of the voters. Let's start with a real quick quote about democracy. Benjamin Franklin once said, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on the menu. And that's true. There's a very real thing called the tyranny of the majority. The men that wrote the Constitution were acutely aware. Madison in particular talked at great lengths about how the democracy could be a beautiful thing, but how it had a tendency under democracy for the majority to abuse the minority. And he didn't mean ethnic or racial minority. He meant minority of opinion, which when it comes to politics is all that matters. So those who win an election could punish the losers in a democracy because they had the majority of the votes. That was a very real concern. The structure of our government, the structure of the Constitution of the United States, is designed specifically to prevent this exact thing. The exact thing that the left now in the media is saying that they would like to have done, they would like the majority to rule America, is the exact reason the majority doesn't rule America. So let me explain how it works. The House of Representatives is proportionally designated to population. So each member of the House of Representatives at the time of the last census represents essentially the same number of people. There may be minor differences, but essentially just about the same number of people. I believe it's about 144,000, but I could be wrong. As the population grows, the number of legislators doesn't. So basically they represent more people. Okay, so that is the most representative branch of our government, is the lower house of the legislature, the House of Representatives. The members of the House of Representatives are elected every 2 years, all of them, every 2 years, which means not only are they elected proportional to population, but they're up for election on a regular basis. Reason being, if the people are not happy with them, they can replace them. Now, there are those who have suggested that this was done specifically because yokels would make promises to their neighbors, they would not be able to keep the promises, they would then make their neighbors mad and be replaced, and this would make the House of Representatives a revolving door of people who are ineffective. Whether that's the true or not is irrelevant. That's the House of Representatives. The United States Senators and the United States Senate, the upper chamber, were intended to be selected, originally in the Constitution, were selected by the state legislatures. So the state governments themselves had a direct role in selecting representation in the national government. That is no longer the case. They are now elected by the people of the states. And the way that they are elected is one-third of the Senate is elected every 2 years. They serve a six-year term. This was done quite specifically to prevent against populist outbursts. The House of Representatives is very susceptible to populism. You know, if a wave of sentiment sweeps over the country, the House of Representatives could easily be entirely replaced. The Senate cannot. Not even a majority. Not even a plurality. Only one-third. It would take 6 years of a populist wave to replace the entire Senate. The founders of our country and the authors of the Constitution felt this was unlikely. And they've been proven correct. Even with direct election of senators, it's definitely the more stable house of the legislature. And the President of the United States is selected by the Electoral College. Electoral College rules are decided by the states. Now, it so happens that every state in the Union now has their Electoral College delegates tied in some way or another to the popular vote in the state. But that wasn't a requirement. And it wasn't always the case. Some states the legislature chose, some states a coalition chose, some states had direct election of Electoral College electors. Nonetheless, the purpose of this system was to prevent the tyranny of the majority. Madison, from Virginia, where most of the people lived at the time they wrote the Constitution, leaned towards a more representational government. But Virginia didn't want to be a country, it wanted to be part of a country. And so they had to come up with a compromise in order to get Rhode Island and New Jersey and Delaware and whoever else to come along, because they wouldn't be well represented in the national government, and there was fears that a more powerful government like the Constitution created versus the original Articles of Confederation would become tyrannical against the smaller states. And so the compromise that made this all work is what we have today. It is intentionally undemocratic if you look at it simply from the basis of population. That's the point. Every state has two senators. That makes each state equal in the Senate. That's the point. It's not an unfortunate outcome that has transpired over time. It is literally the point of the document. It is literally the point of the Senate. The Senate is there to balance out the House of Representatives. The Senate is there to provide sort of a steady, stable counterbalance to the passions of the people, and also to represent the states. That's why the senators were chosen by the states. So at one point or another, we had a constitutional amendment to change that, so the senators could be elected by the people. It doesn't make any difference. They still represent the state they're from. Both senators each represent the entire state. They don't divide it up. Whole state. The reason Rhode Island has two and Wyoming has two and New York has two and California has two is so that the more populous states could not exert their influence over the Senate. It's not an accident that 18 senators represent the majority of the United States of America. So please stop writing articles in the Huffington Post and Slate.com and wherever else you nutty liberal bloggers want to write complaining about the unfairness of it. You sound like moronic children who skipped civics class. And unfortunately, I fear that the majority of your readers are moronic children who skipped civics class. And for the love of God and all that is holy, stop saying that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, man. Hey, Hillary won the popular vote. California has a very large population. They also get a large number of electoral college votes, proportionate to their population, because that's how the electoral college works. So California is represented in a proportional, democratic way in the Electoral College. The fact that California has a highly skewed majority of Democrats versus Republicans, and the fact that the Republicans know they can't win and so many don't go to the polls, makes every presidential election in California skewed really, really far left. Really, really far towards the Democrats. It is true, if you take the country as a whole, that Donald Trump got about 2 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton. And you could be a moron and say that Hillary won the popular vote. Man. Trump's not legitimate president. Man. Or you could be as scholarly as a 10-year-old with an IQ of 90 and recognize the fact that Hillary Clinton won California by 4 million votes. So if you take California out of the equation, Trump won the country by 2 million votes. Never mind the fact that before California, which is on the West Coast, meaning as the last group of states other than Hawaii and Alaska to register the Electoral College votes, the election was already over. So before the polls closed, the election was over. Added to the fact that the Republicans know they can't win in California. They're a small minority. So they don't vote because they don't need to vote. Because one, the election was already over, and two, they aren't going to win. So you take all that into account, and the fact that Hillary had more votes nationwide than Trump becomes not an asterisk, not a talking point for 2 years, you idiots have been repeating it, but rather just a little bit of trivia. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's not how we select the president of the United States of America. The states pick the president. Okay? And they get the Electoral College votes proportionate to their population. So you can only win California's Electoral College votes one time. Trump didn't get a single one. It is not the case that Trump got some and Hillary got the rest and it wasn't fair. Man, not true. She got them all. Every single last one. And lost. It doesn't matter if she got every vote in California or she got 50.01%. She would get all the Electoral College votes from that state. That's how it works. That's how it's worked for a long time. Most of the times, everybody seems like they're happy with that. Not in 2008 or 2016. Now nobody's happy with it because it didn't turn out the way you wanted and you're just a crybaby. You're a crybaby pretending that you don't understand how the Constitution was written or why it was written that way. You're a crybaby pretending you don't understand the Electoral College or how it works. You're a crybaby pretending that getting 4 million extra votes in one state matters. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's dumb that you keep bringing it up. It's dumb that Trump ever has said anything about it other than you're dumb. As far as it should ever have gone was maybe somebody could have noticed, like, oh, that's funny. Hillary won by so many votes in California that she actually won the majority of the country by a slim margin. Not that it's relevant to deciding who's president of the United States, but it is interesting. And you go, oh, yeah, that is kind of interesting. And then in 20 years or 30 years, it could be on a trivial pursuit card. How many presidents lost the popular vote but became president anyway? And it's a small number. I think it's 3. Trump. And then back in the day, there was a couple, I think. So ridiculous. And stop pointing out, like you've discovered something, that the Senate of the United States of America does not represent the population of the United States of America. It's not supposed to. That's the freaking point. The Senate represents the states, so they have a role in the government. Now, the House of Representatives is actually much, much more powerful than the Senate because all spending bills originate in the House of Representatives. So any money that the government spends comes out of the House, where you directly elect according to your population. So California and New York and Illinois and all your very populous, urban, liberal states, you get lots of people in the House of Representatives, and you get to make all kinds of decisions about how to spend money. And the Senate has only been too willing to go along for a really long time. So let's not pretend that's not going on. But the Senate exists to keep the House in check. That's what they're there for. To keep the House of Representatives from passing laws that are tyrannical towards any one state or group of states. That's the point. So you're not some Sherlock Holmes investigative journalist genius that have discovered that the Senate isn't representational to population. I'm going to say it one more time and then I'm going to stop. That's the point of the Senate. All right, we got to move on. Speaking of the Senate, one of the senators of the United States of America is a woman named Elizabeth Warren. She's a senator from Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren is a very, very vocal critic of the President of the United States, which I actually don't mind. I think it's kind of cool. And they seem to have fun with it, with each other, kind of bantering back and forth. And it provides for a lot of entertainment. And also, as with all people in government, it provides a constant watching eye. Elizabeth Warren is not going to let Trump get away with anything. If you want to know what Trump's up to or what the other side of the coin, check out Elizabeth Warren, because she doesn't let him get away with anything. And that's good. That's not bad. That's good. But Elizabeth Warren, like all people that have ascended to the highest level of a corrupt system, is a corrupt liar. This should not come as a surprise to anyone. And I am only picking on her because she's done something exceptionally stupid. I don't believe that the other 99 senators are less corrupt. I don't believe that they are more truthful, necessarily. This particular lie was originally told before the internet. And probably, had the internet never existed, she could have gotten away with it for a really long time. But the internet ruined it. And there are other people, there are other examples of the internet showing up and really making a mess of things. But essentially, here's the deal. Elizabeth Warren had a story in her family that she had some Native American ancestry, American Indian. I had similar stories. My great-grandmother on my mother's side had black irises, or so dark brown that you couldn't tell the difference between that and black. This was the evidence in my family that we were somehow descended from Native Americans. I don't believe Native Americans actually had black irises. I don't think that's a thing. Even as a kid, I thought the story was funny and kind of silly. Elizabeth Warren, apparently, take her story much, much more seriously. Because in the world of universities, which is where she comes from, and Democrat politics, where she currently is, having victim points really matters a whole lot. Victim points are a big deal in both places. So first at Penn, which is an Ivy League school, and then second at Harvard, which is an Ivy League school, Elizabeth Warren changed her ethnicity from white, or race from white, to Native American. Now, why does this matter? Why did she do it? When the only thing that she had to suggest to her that she might be of have some smidgen of Native American ancestry was that her a story that her mother told her, just like I had a story that my mother told me. It never dawned on me to tell anyone that I was actually an Indian. So why did she do it? Well, she did it because universities do diversity hire, and being a woman is pretty good, but being a minority woman is better. And she ascended to the highest echelons of law professordom pretty rapidly and made a lot of money doing it. She was listed in publications put out by the school about their legal departments saying that she was a Native American woman. She was a member of Harvard's minority something or another, which she accepted and went. She never corrected the record. She never said, no, that's not true, because she was benefiting from it financially. Now, she since had people from both Penn and Harvard come out and say that although she announced that she was an Indian, that that didn't play any role in her advancement or hiring. And that's presented as evidence that it wasn't used in weighing out whether she should be hired or advanced in her field. Okay. It's not legal to discriminate based on race. So you cannot say we take race into account when we're hiring people, because that's against the law, the Civil Rights Act. You can't do that. But there's enormous social pressure to have minorities in your thing. So if you find one, you want to get them around. And that's what happened. And she knew that's what happened, and that's why she did it. She became the head professor of law at Harvard, or whatever she became, precisely because she was a minority female. Not to say she wasn't qualified, it just... that's an extra feather in her cap. So she may have been just as qualified as the white guy or the white girl or whatever. And she certainly was just as qualified as herself. And she might have been the most qualified candidate. But at the end of the day, the reason that she went out of her way to change her race on forms from white to Indian was because she knew it gave her an advantage. That's why she did it. Now, that doesn't look good years later, when you're running for Senate or you've reached the public's attention. It doesn't look good to say, well, yeah, I lied about it because I wanted to get a better job, or I wanted to get paid more money, or I wanted to be included in the minority women diversity hire club. But that's why she did it. Let's not kid ourselves. It wasn't because she actually thought she was 51% Native American. But like I said, when she told that lie, there was no internet. So the only person she really lied to was the person who was looking at her application. or people in her department. It's a very little lie to a very small group of people. Now, when the internet came out, all that became public, and the public found out about it because in the era of party politics and tribal nonsense, we look for things to attack each other on, even ridiculous nonsense like beer parties when you're 17 years old, and the application for jobs and some pamphlet that says you're a minority Native American woman law professor. So she got wrapped up in that. So then she tried to walk it back. Well, she told the story about her ancestry, and you can't tell me my family's history, and blah, blah, blah. So since she was vocally opposed to Trump, he was vocally opposed to her, and he picked this one facet of her record out to pick on her, probably because that's Trump's style, the easiest, quickest thing. So he started calling her Pocahontas, which you probably know. I'm assuming you know. To great effect. Became a big joke. She's essentially a meme. On the right, she's a meme. It's a big joke. So at some point, he said that if she got her DNA test done, he would donate $1 million to the charity of her choice if she was really an Indian. By the way, I use the terms Native American and Indian interchangeably, and sometimes I try to use the Native American because I know that there are people around today who think you should, and then sometimes I use Indian. I don't at all in any way, shape, or form mean Indian in a derogatory form. The most revolutionary, the most pro-American Indian group ever was called AIM, the American Indian Movement. So if they're okay with it, I think that we all should be okay with it, since they actually wanted true sovereignty and a bunch of stuff that no one talks about anymore. Leonard Peltier, you could Google it, you know. Sort of the last chapter of the cruelty of the American government to the Native people. Anyway, so he starts calling her Pocahontas, and she's calling him whatever, the orange, whatever, and they go back and forth, and it's kind of funny and entertaining. So at some point, she goes and has the DNA test done. And then she has the DNA test analyzed by a Stanford genetics professor. You know, Stanford, the last bastion of conservative thought in the country. Anyway, Stanford's a very liberal university. So clearly, as a former liberal university professor, she could find a liberal university professor to say probably anything in this climate, right? Let's be honest. But nonetheless, so what does he say? He analyzed it and said that she's absolutely a Native American. No. So Carlos Bustamante is his name. He's a professor of genetics. He performed this analysis and determined that she's somewhere between 1/32nd and 1/512th. Yeah, you got that right. 1/512th Native American. Now, he freely admits that there's a large absence of Native American DNA on file in order to create consistent markers, which is the reason for his large margin of error, you know, 30 times the standard margin of error. And so since Native Americans have by and large decided not to participate in any kind of DNA studies, he used South American people's DNA, who identified as part Native. So it's bad science with an enormous margin of error. And she says that makes her that she's true, telling the truth. Now, the funniest part about this to me is that people who support her will say, oh, see, she's Native American, because that guy said she might be 1/512th Native American based on DNA from South American people who claim to be Native. And we all know the Spanish were much less into segregation when it came to choosing wives than the English. So most of South America is some sort of mix. And when you're dealing with 1/512th, that's 0.1%. I don't know that you're dealing with a real firm ground. But the people who are opposed to Elizabeth Warren's socialist view for the future of America, like myself, are going to laugh at this. And the people who are in favor of Elizabeth Warren's socialist view for America are going to say, see, she is an Indian. And that to me is the funniest part. Because if Rand Paul had claimed to be an Indian and this came out, I would be on here today with a podcast laughing at Rand Paul for being a moron. But the super Trump people and the super anti-Trump people, man, they do not care. They will take a 0.1%, perhaps, maybe, chance and run with it. Like the lies she told about her Native American ancestry are hysterical. She also told the story that her parents eloped because her father's family was so opposed to her mother's Native American heritage that they opposed the wedding, and so her parents had to elope in order to get married because his parents wouldn't approve. Her mother was maybe, if Bustamante's analysis is correct, which I think is suspect, but if it's correct, her mother might have been 1/250th Native American. How would anyone know? Oh, I guess it'd be 4 times. She might have been 100th. But whatever. That's not the point. So she told this story about her parents having to elope and all this stuff. And it turns out somebody did 5 seconds of research and found the record of her parents' marriage in 1932 at the Methodist church that his parents attended. Oh, isn't that funny? So she lied about being Native American in order to get a job and then to get promoted, to get money, taking advantage of a system that shouldn't exist but does, that minorities get preferential treatment at universities when it comes to hiring. Which, if you're a meritocracy person like I am, maybe shouldn't bother you that much. So she was qualified and might have not gotten hired as the most qualified candidate unless she lied. Because they do take it into account. And she lived that life and she knew they took it into account, which is why she did it. And they shouldn't take it into account. They should just take the best candidate. Whether the best candidate is a white guy or a Native American woman or a half African American, half Puerto Rican lesbian in a wheelchair, whatever the case may be. When it comes to understanding the law and being an effective teacher, let's just pick the best one. Why do we got to go through all this rigmarole? So I don't really care. She should just come out and say, you know what, the stupid university system is corrupt. They absolutely use racial profiling in order to hire professors, and I knew that, and I wanted to work in that field because it's my passion, and I knew I was a great law professor, and so I did what I had to do to get the job. Well, she can't do that because she's involved now in Democrat Party politics, where identity politics reigns supreme. So she has to just hold on to it forever. But her backup story, her little anecdotal story about her parents having to elope because her mother was part Indian, is also a complete and total lie. So ridiculous. So part of it I think it's funny is that you're going to hold up 1/512th as evidence that you are what you said you were, which she's not, by the way. And the other thing I think is fascinating to watch is the way that the people who are super left, opposed to Trump, super in favor of Elizabeth Warren's socialist agenda for America, will 100% embrace her explanation and say that that proves that she's an Indian, that Trump's a liar, and now he should pay $1 million to her charity. Now, the charity she told him to donate the money to is an indigenous women's charity. So the first thing Trump should do is look into it to make sure it's legit. And if it legitimately is helping indigenous women in this country, you know, Native American, Indian women in this country, some a group of people who desperately need help for a variety of reasons, he should donate $2 million. And he should say, I'm donating the money not because Elizabeth Warren is an Indian, but because of the harm Elizabeth Warren's lie has added insult to injury to this community of women. And that white people roaming the countryside, masquerading as racial minorities, hurts racial minorities. And that he's sick and tired of it, from Rachel Dolezal to Sean King to Elizabeth Warren to whoever. And he's not going to take it anymore. And so he's going to donate $2 million to this group to make up for the damage that she's done to their community, stealing a job from a Native American woman, lawyer, and a role model from the tribes people and the reservations that they could have had for all these years but didn't. That would be perfect. It'd be perfect because, like I said, it's a group of people who certainly need some help. And it'd be perfect because nobody could say that Trump went back on his word, because he was going to donate double what he said. And it'd be perfect because it would put another nail in Elizabeth Warren's 2020 presidential bid. Although, the flip of that coin is maybe you want her to run, because she could never get elected. But maybe you don't. I don't know. But anyway, those are the two interesting things that are going on, in my opinion, today. There's a thing about Saudi Arabia. I'm thinking I might talk about that tomorrow. But a just quick preview of that. The press is criticizing Trump for cozying up to the Saudi royal family. Like, no president's ever done that before, right, guys? So I think that's going to be tomorrow's podcast. Most recently, it seems like they may have executed a journalist. But of course, journalists don't like that, which they shouldn't. No one should like that. It should be, should 100% be off limits. So I think that's going to be tomorrow. Listen, thank you so much for tuning into the podcast today. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate everyone's participation this weekend in the Kindle Free Toxic Masculinity Crisis deal. I know that you're wonderful, wonderful, frugal people cut from the same cloth as me, and that you'll hold up your end of the bargain and tell your friends to go out and buy the Toxic Masculinity Crisis, and I appreciate that too. So thank you in advance. Have a fantastic Monday, everybody, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.